Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on May 6th, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Power Girl number 1. Now, what did you think of this one, Bob?
I liked it okay. I mean, I like Amanda Conner's art. I like Palmiotti and Gray when they're writing stuff. I kind of liked her going back to the Karen Starr identity and starting up Star Tech again. I liked the character interplay moments that she had with, you know, like what appears to be her personal assistant, the guy who's interviewing with her, the kind of geeky guy, and then the kind of mad scientist guy who I'm sure is going to pop up down the line in some evil capacity. You know, I liked it good. I liked it just fine.
I mean, I went in thinking it was going to, you know, we've got a solid creative tier, Gray and Palmiotti, O'Connor on the art, so I thought it should be good. And of course, after reading it, I thought it was good. It was a fun read, a solid story and art. And actually, I think this did a really good balance between setting up the new supporting cast, and as you mentioned, there were quite a few characters there that we actually got kind of a feel for, and having a good amount of Power Girl action scenes, too. You know, so, I mean, this day and age, it's rare to see the secret identity portion of the characters. So for them to spend as much time and as much quality time on that, I was really happy with.
Yeah, they put a lot more into characterization for the Power Girl character than I can't remember when I've seen it before. I mean, maybe back in the 70s or something, but
I would actually go with the Fury of Firestorm issues at the later end, because that's where I think Starware Labs originated, where she was starting up this high-tech company, and Firestorm would keep saving the day by, you know, magnetizing the train and destroying her hard drive she had with her, or, you know, things like that. I mean, she was convinced Firestorm had it out for her. Which, of course, was a good counterpoint at the time to, you know, Firestorm, you know, trying to hit on her with the JLA-JSA team-ups or what have you. The thing that confused me here with Starware Labs is, I mean, they're very clearly setting up, hey, it's getting back into business and all that stuff. But there's this one comment where she says, well, I had to spend this huge amount of money buying back shares of the company. Well, if you had to buy it back and it's not open for business, what the hell was the other owner doing with it? I mean, not a big deal, but it just kind of confused me.
Maybe she's just buying the rights and the name back or something. Who knows?
Or just, you know, changing the focus of it, you know, whatever. But, you know, I like the fact that they spent the time to set that up. And I thought they covered a lot of ground in this issue.
This could have been a lot different if you would have given it to a lot of other creators. It could have just been like total, you know, mindless cheesecake, and like mostly how you see Power Girl. You know, she like pretty much exists to, you know, fly around waving her boobs at things. And that is pretty much as much characterization as you've gotten out of the character in I don't know how long. So this was a really welcome departure.
Yeah, what we got here was thoughtful cheesecake. We still had the cheesecake and there's comments about it.
Yeah, I mean, you still have the aspect, right. But, I mean, it's not just, and like I said, it's just because you add in the story elements, you add in the characterization, you add in, you know, kind of like just, you know, kind of a nod and a wink to that kind of stuff because you have it, but it's not just that.
Right, right. And they address that aspect of the character and I thought handled it fairly well. Could somebody be offended by those aspects in here? Yeah, if they try hard enough. But, I mean, really, I thought it was tastefully handled, because she's well endowed as a character, and it's not like they could just suddenly change that.
Right.
But they dealt with it, you know, I thought, in a good way. The other thing I thought was a really interesting choice here, and a really good choice, was Ultra Humanite as the villain for this story. Because as a villain formerly of Earth 2, it felt kind of appropriate. And the twist at the end of the story here, I thought was really interesting and a good hook for the next issue. You know, some of the stuff going on with Manhattan kind of reminds me of an old Marvel team-up story, but I don't think they're going to go down that route.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? So all in all, I thought this was really good. I can't remember. Is this a set up as a miniseries or an ongoing?
Pretty sure it's set up as an ongoing.
That's good to hear. Based on the story they've got here, they set up, the status quo. Power Girl, you know, is a hero. Karen Starr is a businesswoman. They've got the foundation here, I think, for a very long-running title. If people, you know, check it out and give it a shot.
And interestingly, I think they would have been better off, because I wasn't that excited about it based on the previews pages they were printing in all those different comics. They could have picked some different pages out of this story that would have probably gotten me a little bit more anticipating what was coming along.
Yeah, because they did, what, just the first 7 or 8 pages?
Yeah, and, you know, it's standard, you know, fighting these giant robots that are speaking in some kind of, you know, wacky techno kind of code, which, you know, you can, like, make out some leet-speak kind of words out of it or something, but it's just, you know, how much effort do I want to put into trying to decipher what the hell these robots are saying? And the answer was not terribly a lot, you know?
I didn't even want to put in that much.
You know, you can see at various places they're saying things like, you know, delete, and they're using, you know, threes for E's, and they got response and collapse and, you know, whatever, primary and other kinds of words, harvest, that you can kind of pick out, but it's like, okay, it's just irritating.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, I thought this was a much better issue than those preview pages led me to believe, too, so I would agree with
right.
that.
So I gave it a 4.
As did I. You know, I thought it was a good, solid first issue, and I recommend people check it out, particularly if they're a fan of the character.
So our next book is New Mutants #1 from Marvel.
Now, I don't know about you, Bob, but I went into this thinking, you know, I like the original New Mutants series and the team, but I wasn't really convinced we needed them back together in a monthly title. And I suspect we're going to have somewhat different views on this based on me being more familiar with the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe than you may be.
I think you're probably right.
Well, hopefully one thing we can agree on is the wraparound cover was kind of nice.
Yeah, I got... Well, actually, I didn't get the wraparound cover. I got the Alex Ross cover.
Ah. The one thing that surprised me on the wraparound is it looks like they've got Cypher on the back cover, which I don't know if all these other characters are going to make it back into the team or not. But I always liked Cypher. Overall, though, after reading this, I was really sold on having the team back together and in a monthly title. You know, I thought it was a good combination of the team kind of falling back into the old rhythm while clearly having grown a lot since that original series. You know, these are the same characters, but not at the same point in their lives that they were, you know, way back when. And that kind of, you know, dichotomy or whatever really worked for me. The choice of the villain here I thought was appropriate. I'm not a big fan of that villain, but it fit. So, you know, overall, I thought this was good. The art was really nice. And I will commend Marvel that this was a $3.99 book, and it had 34 pages of story. And I think it made good use of that extra space and warranted that extra space.
Well, on the plus side, I really like the art. Diogenes Neves, he's a really good artist. I like his stuff. I do know the basic New Mutants characters because I did read New Mutants when it first came out. And I think I read it up to about the Demon Bear stuff.
So that would have been the first 2 or 3 years?
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, probably made it to issue maybe 40 or so before I stopped reading it. So, I mean, I'm familiar with the base characters. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they're alluding to, like when Magic comes back and all these people are, like, making jibes at her about whatever she did. And it's like, I had no context on any of that kind of stuff. But, I mean, it wasn't, like, completely off-putting. I mean, I could look at it and say, okay, well, I guess she did some kind of stuff that isn't sitting too well with these people, but, you know, her old school chums are still sticking by her, you know, and Sam and Bobby. I mean, I know who these guys are. I mean, I got to the end of it, and I wasn't, like, seriously compelled to pick up the series, but I didn't dislike it either. I mean, overall, I gave it a 3. I mean, it was fine. But again, it's part of it's steeped in that X-Universe stuff that I've just never been that big of a fan of, let's say.
I think part of it is, given just how expansive the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe is, either you get into that corner or you don't to a certain degree, and that's going to color your opinions on some of the titles. You know, as somebody who read the entire New Mutants run, as well as when it became X-Force, and is, you know, I've been following these characters, you know, aside from the last couple of months, since they were created. You know, and some of the stuff they're talking about with magic, I think, was from that recently X Infernus storyline or whatever miniseries.
Which I didn't read, yeah.
Right. But again, there's so much of that stuff that either you're following it or you're not. And if you're not, it's hard to find a good entry point into the X-Men titles. Now, this, I think, was a little bit better than most in some respects, but to other degrees, probably worse than most, because you've got to have some familiarity with the original New Mutants, plus familiarity with the recent New Mutants, which are all the other students that they have in the first couple of pages showing up. So, I mean, there's a lot of characters involved in this that, you know, I'm aware of, I know, but if you don't have an attachment to some of them or familiarity with most of them, it's going to be a barrier to entry.
Right.
Now, for me, what worked was the whole nostalgia thing. I mean, just like right around, I guess right before the staple or whatever, where we've got the New Mutants coming out in the X-Men costumes. To me, I thought that was really cool. Because it was, I mean, yes, they've kind of graduated long since, but symbolically, this is them actually going out as, I mean, they're being called the New Mutants, but really as the X-Men. You know, so that kind of, I don't want to say coming of age thing, but you know what I mean. That worked for me. But again, if you hadn't been following the characters, it's like, yeah, what's the big deal? They're just in generic X-Men costumes. But I think this has a better chance than the last couple of junior X-Men teams they've put together of sticking around for a while. But I would say that really one of the high points here is the art. Because, you know, we've got a scene or two here where we've got Magma and Magic in identical costumes, pretty much. Both, you know, young female, blonde hair of about the same length. Yet it's clear which character is which. You know, going back to the, what was the bear storyline that you were just referencing?
The demon bear, the Sienkiewicz stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was getting really stylized at that point, which was, you know, fine, but, you know.
But I couldn't tell Sam and Magic apart.
Yeah.
Different genders, heights off by about a foot, and hair lengths off by about a foot. You know, but again, he was going for a stylized thing, you know. But here, this is some nice clean art. Like I said, I was very happy with this. I gave this a 4, again, as a first issue. It did pretty much, you know, everything I needed it to do. And, you know, again, I've got a liking of these characters, which, you know, gave it a leg up for me that it didn't have with you.
Right. And like I said, I mean, the art was definitely the high point of the issue, and I didn't dislike it. I just didn't, you know, fall. And you know what? This is the kind of thing where I'm not going to buy it on an ongoing basis, but if I see it down the line and in a bin somewhere, I would pick up the issues for a, you know, a buck or something and, you know, read the story. I'm just not going to pay, you know, full price for it.
No, and I totally understand that. But again, I think part of that's you not being as invested in the X-Men corner of the universe.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they did this same job with, I don't know, like the Defenders or something, I would be buying it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's something Marvel really needs to start thinking about, particularly with the X-Men stuff, but to lesser degrees with some of their other franchises that are expanding, like the Avengers. You know, once you've gotten so many characters, so many books, so much history that's all kind of in play all at once, you gotta work on accessibility of the storylines. And I think they did a decent job here, but I also think if I didn't know who any of these characters were going in, I probably wouldn't have any idea coming out either. But that's just how deep and convoluted the X-Men lore has become, you know, over the last couple of decades. You know, the same thing could be said about a show like Heroes or Lost. You know, you come in late and you're going to be a little confused.
Right. And our last book is DC Wildstorm's Astro City, The Dark Age, Book 3, Number 1.
Now, I got a question for you about the first story page here. Was it just me, or was the black text against the dark gray clouds kind of hard to read?
It was really hard to read. As I was reading it, I was thinking, wow, that should be like white or something, or it should be in word balloons, or it should be something, because it was, you know, for me, very difficult to read, but, you know, I'm getting older.
Well, I blame that both on the letterist and the editor. Somebody should have caught that when they were proofing the book or something. And maybe it was easy to read on the computer screen or whatever, but that seems like an amateurish mistake, and that's not something I expect in Astro City. You know, because the guys doing this, you know what they're doing. And really, that's, I don't want to say the extent of my complaints on the book, but more or less, yeah. You know, Astro City, to me, is a different kind of a comic book than most. Yes, it's a superhero book, but it is a deeper, more sophisticated superhero book, and this issue was a good example of that. We're getting on to kind of a new chapter in the life of the Williams brothers, Charles and Royal, that we've been following for, you know, Dark Age books 1 and 2, which each had 4 issues. And this was a really cool kind of a look at what it's like to be one of the guys getting trained to be a foot soldier for a supervillain army.
And for me, that was when the issue kicked into high gear. I mean, the first part was okay, but when we get to the pyramid training camp with Royal,
yeah,
wow, that was like, it was like, this was so great. You know, just seeing the behind the scenes of, you've seen so many of these different, you know, like, I don't know, not just in any comic, you know, you got Hydra agents, AIM agents, you know, all these bad guys always have this cadre of goons that are serving them. Where do these guys get trained? Where do you go to actually hire these guys? And just the behind the scenes at the indoctrination training camp, boot camp kind of thing was just fascinating. You know how Busick, you know, just set that up and played it out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he touched on everything as to why these guys would sign up for this, how they get trained, and just getting to kind of know some of these guys, you know, and their mindset, how they're reacting to the training stuff, I thought was just brilliant, you know. And this is, again, the kind of thing, like you said, we see all of these standard, you know, cliches and trappings of the superhero genre. In an Astro City, Busick is really kind of taking them, you know, one or two at a time and just kind of putting, I don't want to say the logistics behind it, but exploring those areas a little deeper than we usually get. And it makes for some really good stories.
There's even some little throwaway things that he doesn't, you know, beat you over the head with the explanation, but it's just like at the one page where he's getting recruited, and Royal is, his narration is saying, "I wonder why they bothered with the medical stuff. They didn't turn anybody down. But then when I got to the camp, I noticed not everybody who'd gone under the sub showed up in the barracks. It made me glad I was in pretty good shape." And you think about it, it's like, well, you know, somebody's like actually going and filling out the applications and stuff. They don't want to turn that person down and have them wandering around embittered that they got turned down and, like, you know, telling the cops about it or something. So they just take everybody who signs up and they just apparently just kill the people who weren't actually up to snuff, you know. It's not really stated, but, you know, that's how I read that between the lines. And there's little things like that that he's got in there.
Yeah, yeah, there's tons of that kind of stuff. And to me, that's a lot of what makes it that deeper, more sophisticated storyline. I mean, there's some stuff in here commenting on, I think, you know, Jack in the Box doing something which may tie into some of the earlier issues of Astro City. We've got some stuff with I guess it's the Apollo 7 or whatever, and the Incarnate and stuff. I mean, there's the Apollo 11, excuse me. And there's just little story nuggets, you know, tossed almost everywhere in the background. And he's got such a full and complex narrative universe that he's built up over really a fairly small body of work compared to, say, Marvel or DC's universes, or even smaller ones like the Ultimate Line or, you know, the New Universe or you know, whatever. And kind of how he's playing with the conventions over the passage of time, because these stories take place over the course of different decades. It's great stuff, and really, anyone who hasn't read Astro City really ought to go do so if they like superheroes at all. I think it's Kurt Busiek's best work, and I would say start with one of the trades. You know, it's, there's, the earlier stuff was a lot more done in one and two-part stories and stuff like that, so if you pick up almost any of the early trades, it's going to be a good jumping on point.
Yeah. And we did that back issue spotlight on Astro City that people can look up on the website too. If you're interested in Astro City at all, we talk in a lot more detail about Life in the Big City, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. The first trade.
We'll throw a link to that episode in the show notes for this show. And you know, you can click over and check that out if you never saw it and you're interested in Astro City at all.
Now, for me, this was a 4 out of 5. The series as a whole, definitely 5 out of 5. But to me, it's one that kind of, you know, just builds and builds on itself. And the whole is definitely greater than the sum of the parts. But none of the parts are bad. I'd be hard-pressed to name any installment of Astro City that would fall below a 4.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I gave it a 4. But that was mostly because the first part was just a little slow for me to get back into, but once it hit the second half, the second half was a 5.
Yeah, no, the second half, certainly once we get into the training camp and stuff like that, it was much better at that point. And the first was good, first part of it was good, but I completely agree with you there.
So, you know, DC did pop the price of this up to $3.99. It was 24 pages, so, you know, on a per-page basis, it was a little more. It was 16.6 cents instead of the 13.6 that Power Girl set you back, or the 11.7 that New Mutants did. But for Busiek's work, it's worth it. You know, this is a creator that I'm willing to pay the extra money for. You know, that's the kind of decision that I make when it's a $3.99 book and it's a creative team that I'm not absolutely in love with, then I maybe think about it, but they can get away with putting the price tag on Busiek's work. And I think they are completely aware of that, which is why they did it. It's one of the very few roughly standard-sized comics from DC or Wildstorm that does have the higher price.
Now, one thing I will say in justification of that higher price, I think Astro City has more reread value than your average comic.
That's true.
Because again, it's got those deeper layers. It's got kind of more happening on the page. So while I prefer cheaper comics just in general and on principle, I think this one's a little bit more justified than the average, you know, 22 page slugfest with no real meat to it. Because this is a much beefier story.
Yep. Indeed. Do you have any news to share with people, John?
Oh, I figured you'd ask that. Just to put it in context, my list of comics this week, I had 10 items, and we just talked about 3 of them. That'll change in the immediate future. Let's see, this goes up on Monday, and that Monday this goes up, I am starting my new job. So the job hunt is over. I am very much looking forward to starting at this company, and looks like a great opportunity. We should be able to, once again, re-expand to our previous, you know, lack of, you know, budgetary confinements on what we're picking each week.
It was mostly hitting us there in the independent space, right?
It was starting to hit on the Marvel side, too.
Yeah, that's true.
But we're still going to have another maybe 2 or 3 weeks where pickings are a little slim, but after that, things should free back up as soon as I'm able to, you know, place a fairly big order with DCBS or otherwise fill in the gaps and get everything back up to speed. So certainly if there are titles you think we should be discussing and we haven't, now that I'm, you know, once again employed, I'm a lot more open to you know, experimenting and trying some new stuff, or at least it's more likely to already be on my list.
So anything good in the other 7 titles that you read this week? I got 24 other cocks this week.
Actually, by and large, it was a pretty good week. Amazing Spider-Man, I'm still loving. I think they've been doing some great stuff on that book.
Yep.
Flash Rebirth, good. Really happy with that. Second issue of Irredeemable, I didn't think was necessarily as good as the first, but it was still good.
I actually liked it a little bit more in that I think it touched on what could very well have been the tipping point on, you know, the Plutonians' descent into madness with the really crazed reaction his girlfriend had when he revealed his identity to her.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And it was definitely a pivotal issue and stuff. I guess part of it is if you hadn't read the first one and you started with the second, which I wouldn't recommend just on principle, you'd be a little lost. And it felt to be a little bit more of a contained story, a good one, don't get me wrong, but it didn't cover quite as much ground as, say, you know, we just did in Astro City or Power Girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But again, it's one that I really hope Mark Waid is able to kind of play this idea out to its fullest potential, because, like you said, kind of that turning point there, it's like, you know, it played true to itself, and really kind of, it's like, okay, I can see that happening, but wow, you know, that sucks.
But there were some good number two issues. I mean, I liked the Irredeemable. Life and Times of Savior 28 number 2 came out, which I don't know if that was still on your pull.
That's one of the ones I'll be picking up in the future.
That was actually pretty good, and Warlord number 2 was outstanding.
Good to hear. I'm looking forward to getting that.
Even better than number 1, I thought. Groom Lake number 2 was outstanding. I liked Flash Rebirth number 2. You read that.
Yeah.
What else? Did you get Shrapnel number 5?
I have not read that.
Okay. It finished off the series and kind of left it, you know, where there's possibility for more story opportunities there. The Destroyer number 2, which is certainly not up your alley, was very good. Boys, trying to think of what else here you might have gotten.
I got World of New Krypton number 3, which I enjoyed.
Oh, that was a good issue. Yeah, I liked that.
They're doing some fun stuff there. Trinity I got, which I don't think you're getting. I'm still enjoying that. And then the final one I got, which really suffered because of the delay, was the final issue of Voltron, A Legend Forged. But it has been months since the previous issue, so the story momentum there was completely shot.
I've been picking up Trinity as I find them for $1. I think I'm up to about issue 30 on it.
Cool.
So I stopped it at 18, and I've managed to find from 19 through 30 all for $1 or less a piece. So I will ultimately get them all and read them. I just have a little bit more of a lag.
Yeah.
A War of Kings number 3, that was a really – I'm really liking that series. So that's another one that I think as you start ramping up, highly recommended for you. Abnett and Lanning, you know, Galactic. You know, cosmic stuff over on the Marvel side. Agents of Atlas number 4. If that didn't make your cut, and I'm looking at Marvel things, that's really good too. So you probably will pick that up.
Yeah. So, well, stuff I'm planning on picking up on the Marvel side: the War of Kings stuff, the Dark Reign stuff, the X-Men stuff, the Avengers stuff. Certainly things like Agents of Atlas, Iron Man. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff I had to cut from budgetary reasons and.
Yeah, Secret Warriors, I think you cut.
Yeah.
And Iron Man was really pretty good, too.
So it's just as the budget starts loosening up again, it'll obviously too much of it will get spent on comics.
Then I also picked up the second volume of Freak Angels hardcover and Marvel Masterworks, The Incredible Hulk, Volume 5, and The Batcave Companion.
How is that? I'm debating.
You know, it's really interesting because it is a Batcave companion. I mean, there is lots of Batcave-y stuff in it, but I was thinking it was going to be exclusively Batcave stuff, and there's just like a lot of general Batman stuff in it. You know, they have lots of, you know, files on like Batman villains from the from the Bronze Age and the Silver Age, and you know, it's really kind of like a Batman companion, more so than a Bat Cave companion.
Ah, okay.
I was thinking it was pretty much just going to be stuff about the Bat Cave and what's in the Bat Cave and detailed stuff about it, and it's really not. It's more of like a Batman kind of thing.
Which is cool, but you got to go in kind of expecting that. Otherwise, you could be a little disappointed, yeah.
And then I got Modern Masters Volume 20, which is Kyle Baker. And it was fine. Nothing against Kyle Baker. I love Kyle Baker, but after 20 volumes, I think they're kind of tapping themselves out on people who are actually Modern Masters. You know, it's like, I mean, it's, they can't call it Modern Really Good Artists, you know, or something like that.
Well, if they wanted to go for a really long... No, I'm not going to say this. I was going to go with the Modern Mediocrity or something, but that's harsh.
Well, that would be when you do the Tan Eng Hoat and the Lenel Francis Yu ones. Actually, you know, I could see them doing a Lenel Francis Yu one, and then I'd know that series has totally spiraled out of control when that one gets solicited.
Well, I mean, the problem with that kind of a series is, how do you define master?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a loaded term there, and the artists I would consider up at that master level, other people might say, I don't know.
I mean, it's very subjective, you know, and realistically, they've rolled through most of the ones that would pretty much be up there without any question, you know. I mean, they've done, you know, Perez, they've done John Byrne, Art Adams, you know, I mean... It's just like they've done all of the, you know, Walt Simonson, you know, it's just they've gone through the list of people who've been around a long time. And it's maybe more of just a, you know, body of work kind of thing too, you know. Somebody's got to have been around and producing consistently top quality work for 10, 15 plus years, you know, for me to consider him to be master.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And Kyle Baker, he's great. I like Kyle Baker, but he doesn't do that much. You know, he does some stuff here, he does some stuff there. His Plastic Man stuff was really good. I like his Baker's work that he's done, but he's not out there as much as some of the other people that have been in the series. But that was my week, and it was a good week. There was some good stuff.
Yeah, definitely some good stuff. So does that pretty much do it?
I think so.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss The Unwritten number 1 from DC Vertigo, Dark Reign Young Avengers number 1 from Marvel, and Knights of the Dinner Table number 150 from Kenzerco.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.